Support for KPLU's Studio Sessions comes from the Shack Art Center, featuring a glass pumpkin patch and glass blowing demonstrations during Shacktoberfest, September 25th through 28th, at the Shack Art Center in Everett. More info at Shack, SCHACK.org.
Welcome to a very special Blue Plate special with John Cleary, a longtime member of Bonnie Raitt's band. He's also worked with Walter Wolfman Washington, Taj Mahal, Eric Clapton, and jazz guitarist John Scofield. He's a musician with the rare ability to transcend his geographical background. Growing up in England, he moved to New Orleans and has since become one of the city's best-known musicians. Please welcome John Cleary.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nice. That's John Cleary performing here on 88.5 KPLU, a special Blue Plate special studio session. Thank you, John. Does that tune have a name?
I just made it up.
All right, there you go. Well, and I heard in there elements of so much different of New Orleans music influences. I heard jazz, I heard funk, I heard blues in there. They kind of all meet in the city of New Orleans. So I understand.
Yes, they do.
I understand your fascination. How did you first get turned on to the music of New Orleans?
When I was little, my uncle would travel around the world and he'd disappear for years at a time. And then one day we got a postcard from New Orleans it was a touristy postcard with a ball of cotton attached to it. And he said, I expect by the time this arrives, the ball of cotton won't be there. We're in New Orleans. If I hear When the Saints Go Marching In one more time, it's going to drive me nuts. But this is the most amazing place. And then he stayed there. And then we'd get letters every once in a while. And then when he eventually came back, he had two suitcases full of 45s, and I'd go and stay with him as a little kid, and he would pull out one. He'd be looking for one particular record, and that search would take about 3 hours, and in the interim, he'd finally, oh, I've got to put this one. Oh, I've got to listen to the saxophone solo on this tune.
What were some of those early 45s?
Professor Longhair, Clifton Chenier, Snooks Eaglin, Fats Domino.
Yeah.
I mean, so a lot of really obscure stuff. So I got this amazing education in New Orleans R&B from someone that had lived there and bought records off the bandstand from Professor Longhair and Snooks and all these guys. And each lesson was, they weren't lessons, but they, to me they were like lessons, but it was full of enthusiasm, and he would go into raptures, still does, at a certain point in a tune, you know. And, so my family were all musicians and music lovers. My mum loved New Orleans jazz. And so it was part of the sort of the musical background to growing up, along with all the stuff that every other little kid in England listened to in the 70s, like Top of the Pops on Thursday.
Yeah. So what was your expectation when you yourself moved to New Orleans? Did you have anything in mind, or was
it? Yeah, well, I'd read up about it. I was fascinated by it. The stories weren't just about the music. They were about sort of anecdotes, funny aspects of the city. And it, to me, you know, that time in England was pretty grim, the late 70s. And it just seemed like a sort of an exotic destination. And I'd read up everything I could, stories of slaves and pirates and French and Spanish and Hispaniola and Cuba nearby. Mm-hmm. It all just seemed Africa. All this stuff all seemed to come together in New Orleans. So I kind of felt like I knew a little bit about it. And interestingly, I was set up for an anticlimax. You know, I thought perhaps, you know, be ready for it. But it was even better than I thought it was going to be. It just blew me away. And, you know, I had enough money and a plan to stay for a few weeks, you know, and that was 33 years ago. I'm still there.
Nice.
I never left.
So, and you were not a piano player when you moved to New Orleans. You were a guitar player.
I started playing music. All the men in my family played music, so yeah. I thought that's what you just did when you grew up. Every kid, you want to grow up as quickly as possible. So let me show me. So before I was even old enough to get my hands around the neck of a guitar, they were showing me chords and stuff. So I played guitar. By the time I got to New Orleans when I was about 17 or 18, so I'd already been playing music for about 13 years at that point. but I didn't have a guitar with me when I went, and the house I moved into had a piano, and I'd always messed around on my grandma's piano.
Yeah.
But I loved, you know, limited access to stuff in England, but apart from the records I had in the family I was just talking about. But one piano player who I heard as a sideman on other people's records that really blew me away was Mac Rebennack. When I got to New Orleans, I kind of wanted to find out where he got that stuff from, go beyond that. And he wasn't in New Orleans when I arrived. He'd been living away from New Orleans for years. But the one piano player I had close access to was a guy called James Booker. Mm. And he played in my local bar every Tuesday. I would hang out there every day and stayed in an apartment upstairs. So I got to hear, and I got a job painting this bar room. So I got to hear Booker play every day, just sitting in the bar with a drink. He got free drinks, so he'd go in there and just kill time and noodle away. And I'd be painting outside, listening to James Booker for hours on end every day for a couple of years.
Did you ever sit down with him, or was it just all coming?
No, I never sat down with him. He was a strange cat.
Uh-huh.
He was an unusual character, very eccentric character.
What were some of the early things that you learned to play on the end when you were there?
Well, the stuff I really liked that he did, he played a lot of, you know, he played lots of different styles. And he would play, sometimes it'd be like a real rhythmic pattern, you know, something like that. But the stuff I really liked were the tunes where we'd go off into this colourful sort of realm. It wasn't quite classical, it wasn't quite jazz, it was definitely New Orleans, but yeah. It was really James Booker.
I mean, yeah.
The stuff like, you know, thank you. That was the stuff that really thought, wow, you know, he's way beyond, you know, that sort of blues stuff that, that, you know, a lot of people get hit to. I love the blues. That's really kind of where I started out. But in New Orleans, all of a sudden, it was the blues plus this old rainbow of colors exploding.
Right, plus, yeah.
That's the beauty of New Orleans music, harmonically and rhythmically, too. Rhythmically, it's much more sophisticated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, real elegance in the last piece that you played. Mm,
but it's still got the, you know...
Yeah. It's, you know. You're listening to John Cleary on 88.5 KPLU, a special Blue Plate special studio session. So, John, how do you think funk came to be in New Orleans? I mean, because we have all these other styles. You have the Dixieland, you have the blues, you have jazz, but it's not funky yet.
Well, people bandy about these adjectives. I mean, the whole point of music is that it's abstract and it defies words. So when you do have to try and describe it, people say, what do you play? It's difficult. Funk, people have heard, everyone listen, knows about music, knows about funk, but funk, what is funk? This is not an exact science.
Right.
The first time, though, they used the word funk in a musical context was in New Orleans, long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. And so the story goes, somebody wasn't quite playing it right, and the cat in the studio said, no, man, that's not it. He said, well, what do you want? He said, make it. See, back in those days, funk, something was funky, it meant it smelled bad.
Yeah.
He said, make it sound more funky. Make it sound. So I was like, oh, yeah, all right. And then, so, you know, I don't know what they were playing, but it might have been, you know. But they all got it. So funk is a word that's been used ever since then. But what it really means, generally speaking, funk is syncopation. Yeah. They already had a word for it.
Right.
Syncopation has been a feature of music since people started playing. It's the way you break up four beats of a bar, and then in the context we understand funk is when you put a heavy accent on a weak fraction of the bar. And what that does is it sets up the anticipation that at some point it's going to be resolved. And when it is resolved, it kind of makes you feel good, like everything's all right again. It upsets you and then it reassures you. And you can do that with harmony, and you can do that with rhythm too. So, you know, an easy example is what they call rumba in New Orleans, which is different from rumba in Cuba and different from rumba in Spain. But they understand it as being this kind of... sudden that's it kind of propels you into the next part. It gives you a sense of forward motion. It'd be boring if it was nothing wrong with that, but it ain't funky,
right.
You know, and so, and that comes out of really, I mean, where's it come from? In New Orleans, well, that particular rhythm, if you want to get historical about it, goes back to the habanera, and before that to Africa. And habanera is a rhythm that came out of Cuba. That rhythm in New Orleans, they call that Pakiwe. There's a tune called Hey Pakiwe, a famous carnival tune by the Meters, but that goes back to the Mardi Gras Indians. So some people think that thing came to Cuba from Havana because it spread out from Havana all over the Caribbean and South America. There are other people saying, you know what, it probably evolved at the same time because it's the same people. Mm-hmm. Africans, with Spanish, and French influences from Haiti, Cuba. New Orleans was the northernmost tip of that world. Mm-hmm. And back in those days, you could get to New Orleans by boat, but it wasn't very accessible any other way.
Right.
So the boats came through the Caribbean. So it was all part of the same thing, really. But that's kind of funk, syncopated music that makes you want to dance. It's sexy. It makes you feel good. Like I say, it creates tension and then releases it.
So how, obviously, you become one of New Orleans' proponents, one of the best-known musicians from the city, yet you're not from there. How have you been received well by the natives, the people who grew up there? They accepted you? I mean, well, you know what I mean.
They didn't throw any spears at me, if that's what you mean.
Well, I mean, that's a tough thing.
Yeah, the musicians, Musicians don't care. If you can go up and handle your business, then that's all that counts, really.
Yeah.
You could be green or blue, whatever, it doesn't really make any difference.
Might be better, yeah.
But, I was lucky. I got early on, I got the occasion to get up to go and play with guys who, for me, were just names on the back of, very exotic names on the back of rare records. These were the guys that invented New Orleans R&B. And I would get a phone call to go and play with Earl King or Snooks Eaglin.
Wow.
And at the end of the night, they said, yeah, man, what's your number? Let me call you again. Because I knew all that. I'd done my homework. I grew up listening to all this stuff.
Yeah.
So when I first time I got to play Lonely, Lonely Nights with Earl King, I actually knew the exact piano solo from the recording. I was like, wow. Because, and so, yeah, so I did my homework. And I guess they dug it because they always asked me back. So the musicians didn't care. But for me, it was very apparent at an early age in England that I would be better off playing this music from the inside, looking out, rather than staying in England and doing what there's a lot of great musicians in England, a lot of people who passionately love the music.
Right.
But culturally, they're receiving it from a distance and it's always playing it from the outside, looking in. I want it to be the other way around for me.
Right. So how is it in New Orleans today after the hurricanes and the rebuilding? Has the city still got it?
Well, the question, it's a very slow, gradual process. When you live in New Orleans, you don't see it. Friends that come and visit and haven't been there for a few years, they say, wow, this has really changed, isn't it, around here? New Orleans went through this terrible hurricane. A large part of the population left and didn't come back. Some people are still coming back, but a lot of people are never going to come back. Nevertheless, people are moving to New Orleans, from other cities. It's become quite a popular destination. It's got a lot to offer. And the big question I think local people are asking themselves is New Orleans too funky for its own good? And in a way, people come down there because there's something in New Orleans that's disappeared from a lot of other American cities, I think, really.
Yeah.
And poverty's always been the great preserver. It's always been a poor city. So people come down, they fall in love with New Orleans, with the culture, with the music, with the food. But as it becomes more popular, the more people move there, there's a chance that the balance will get subtly shifted to the point where it starts to become, in its makeup, more like all the other cities everywhere else. And when that happens, then it's considered a little bit more of an easy option for people that perhaps would have been scared off by the violent reputation that New Orleans has, or perhaps other people have found it a little bit too funky. It's nice to go and dip your toes in, but you don't want to live there. But you see everybody else moving out.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, now it's safe to go down, so let's all move down. And then all of a sudden it's like, hang about, what happened to the New Orleans I remember?
Yeah.
It's changed. It has changed. I liked it funky and filthy.
Yeah.
But that's not everybody's taste. You know?
So who's coming up? Who should we be listening for?
Oh, man, you're asking the wrong person. Really. It's all, I'm on tour a lot of the time, and when I'm not playing, to go out and go to gigs would be a bit of a busman's holiday, so I tend to stay
in.
So I'm sure there's always young new cats coming up. And there's a lot of young musicians who have moved to New Orleans from outside, and arguably there's probably more music in New Orleans than there has been for decades.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
But I don't know how much of it is played by New Orleans musicians for New Orleans audiences, and that is New Orleans in character in the approach that people play. And that's the stuff I moved there for, so that's the stuff that interests me. So I don't know. You have to ask somebody that goes out to more gigs.
We're talking to John Cleary on a Blue Plate special studio session. And John, would you like to leave some New Orleans in our ears as we head on out here?
Sure. Let me just make something up.
Go for it.
I'll play a little instrumental version of one of the tunes off this new record I got coming out in a few months. Thank you.